And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is crimes. Each of my guests is explaining a crime, whether it's a crime against humanity, the economy, or ourselves. My next guest is a Yale economist who examines the booms and busts in the first decade of the 21st century and posits that they can be identified and resolved. We'll look back at the roller coaster ride over the past decade from his book, Boom Bustology. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Vikram Mansharamani, I'm sorry to have mispronounced your name. He's an experienced global equity investor based in Boston, Massachusetts. He's also a lecturer at Yale University, where he teaches a popular seminar called Financial Booms and Bust. Vikram has experience in venture capital, investment banking, and in management consulting. Vikram earned his PhD and an MS from the Sloan School of Management at MIT, and he has an MS in political science from MIT. His BA is from Yale University. He currently lives in Brookline, Mass. Welcome, Vikram. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being our guest. I appreciate it so much. And the boom and the bust cycle that we've seen over the last 10 years has been pretty phenomenal. If you don't mind, let me just sort of review the first decade of the 21st century. First, we started out with the Y2K bug, which led to a boom in tech spending. Then the dot-com bubble bust after 9/11. Dow Jones went up to 14,000, back down to 6,500 to where it is here. The housing bubble, which you write about extensively in your book, happened. And that doesn't include such bubble companies as Enron, Global Crossing, WorldCom, or even Bernie Madoff, who really, these guys were all acting illegally, but created some of the boom bust within themselves. So the point is that booms and busts are definitely not a new or a recent phenomenon. So if you will, compare the first part of the 21st century to the first part of the 20th century, where we had the 1907 panic, the Teapot Dome scandal, the Roaring Twenties, and the Great Depression.
Sure. Well, it's a big question you're asking, and I'll do my best to answer it succinctly. The reality is there are lots of common threads that appear through these boom-bust cycles, and you've already touched on a couple of them. But let me just describe it in the five lenses I use in the book, and frankly, the book is a reflection of the class that I teach at Yale. So what I do in the book is I use, like I said, these five lenses. Those five lenses are microeconomics, macroeconomics, psychology, politics, and biology. And for virtually every boom-bust cycle that I've studied in any depth, all five of these lenses provide unique insight, and if in the event that they are all flashing warning signs, you're usually in a bubble. And so making it very simple, microeconomics is usually organized around the concept of supply and demand, and higher prices usually incentivize supply. But if it incentivizes demand, you get bubble dynamics. And so what did we see in all of those early examples you talked about from the early 20th century? We saw exactly that, whether it was in the Florida land boom, whether it was in the stock of RCA or General Motors, et cetera, we saw higher prices incentivizing more demand, not more supply.
All right.
Same thing we saw in the last 10 years. Lens two, do we have easy money and credit fueling these bubbles? And in fact, we do. Whether it was recovering from a war in the early 1920s economically and trying to redeploy resources to higher ends, or whether it was the end of the Cold War and redeploying resources towards more productive ends, there seems to be a rechanneling of resources and a belief on the part of those lending money that that's a good thing and they lend freely against it. And so we have easy money in both cases as well. Lens three, psychology. Here, very simply, greed. Greed and fear alternate, and when you have a preponderance of greed, you have bubble dynamics. Politics, lens number four. Did the government do anything to support something maybe we might call moral hazard, disproportionate risk-taking? Well, we know what happened here in the United States over the last 10 years, but similar dynamics took place in the early 1900s. In fact, the Federal Reserve was created precisely to eliminate the business cycle. And so when things were exuberant, people thought, well, the Federal Reserve will save us. We're no longer having business cycles. And the Federal Reserve was created before the Great Depression. And so we see lots of commonalities like that. I can keep going with a biological framework and other frameworks I have, but the commonalities are very commonplace, actually.
Without a doubt. Well, Vikram, if we can, let's go back to the biological framework, because macroeconomics, microeconomics, and even psychology, I get it. Very simple, very straightforward. Political, you have to have some politics mixed into there, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more in depth about that as regards to the housing crisis that we just came through. But the biological, now that's the most interesting. So if you don't mind, zero down on that a little bit more detail and talk to me how biology plays into one of your five lenses.
Sure, Billy. Well, what I've done in the biology framework, or the biology lens that I use in the book and in the class, is I've broken it down into two separate segments. The first segment is an epidemic lens. So let's analogize a speculative mania that's spreading through a population with a fever or
okay.
a flu.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the most important variables you want to focus in on, if you think in those terms, is how many people are left to infect. That will give you a degree of understanding in terms of where you are in the relative maturity of this epidemic or bubble. And so when your taxi cab driver starts talking to you about internet stocks, you should know that's not a good time to buy. Right? Likewise, when people are talking at dinner party conversations about flipping condos, that's not a good time to buy.
Mm.
And so that's the epidemic insight. The other insight I bring to bear is just simple herd behavior and the fundamental discomfort we have with being confused or being seen as confused. And so human beings generally like to herd in anything you do, and this actually has deep evolutionary biology reasons for it, right? I mean, herd behavior is rational when you're on the plains and you're evading predators.
Right.
It's less rational when you're playing in stock markets and asset markets. Yet for millions of years, this evolutionary biology has indoctrinated in us a desire to stay with our peers.
Got it. My guest is Vikram Mashonrani, and he is the author of Boom-Bust-ology, the spotting of financial bubbles before they burst. And let's talk about one of the historic bubbles that you spend a great deal of time discussing in your book, and that is the housing bust that we just came through, 2007 to 2009. But specifically, I want to look at the political element of this, if we can, Vikram.
Sure.
So describe the political distortions that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac played in this boom-bust cycle.
Sure. Well, Billy, I think the one thing I would describe about the cycle, first of all, I'm not sure we're done with it, and so I take issue with the word we're through it. Unfortunately,
okay.
I wish we were. It's not clear to me we are. We may be. But nevertheless, the role of the government here was enormous in supporting the bubble and then leading to its pop. And so a couple things I would highlight. Number one, as you indicated, Fannie, Freddie, and the government support of the housing finance markets enabled rapid, brisk, and inappropriate lending to lots of people. This created excess demand for housing, and that excess demand manifested itself in higher prices for housing. That was complemented with things like the home mortgage interest deduction, which was effectively a U.S. government subsidy to those who were buying mortgages or buying houses using mortgages. It's not clear to me we as a government should be supporting the use of debt in that way.
Mm-hmm.
It allowed people to take out home equity loans to go buy their flat panel TVs, right? Because
right.
the mortgage was, the mortgage interest deduction allowed it to be effectively subsidized. Should we as a government and a country be supporting the purchase of flat panel TVs? Well, that indirectly is what we were doing as a government and channeling resources in that way. And so those were some of the variables that came into play. The other thing I would say is, frankly, if we think about the government as a manipulator of interest rates, this is part of a long cycle where going back even to the Japanese boom and bust, that government interactions in the money markets have resulted in ever escalating and larger boom bust cycles. And so, as you correctly indicated, we had the Asian financial crisis, which resulted in cheap money and abundant money, resulting in the combination of the year 2000 problem with excess liquidity and tech spending, resulting in the internet bubble. When that collapsed, we had record low interest rates, which created the housing bubble, and now we've got even lower interest rates, which is likely creating other problems elsewhere in the world, if not here.
Without a doubt. All right. My guest is Vikram Manchanarani, and we're talking about his latest book, which is Boom Bustology, Spotting Financial Bubbles Before They Burst. So now I want to turn your powers, your five lenses, if we can, to a little bit of predictive powers, if we can, Vikram.
Sure.
And
try.
Take a look at a couple of bubbles that are in the process right now. And I'm going to start with a real simple one. We're going to look at the commodities bubble, starting with gold.
Sure.
Where is gold? And let's take a look at it through your five lenses.
Perfect, Billy. The five lenses are all flashing warning signs right now. Let me be very simple. Number one, higher prices resulting in more demand? The answer is yes.
Yes.
Number two, do we have any financial innovation that's enabling embedded leverage? Are we seeing ETFs that are enabling new participants? Are we seeing futures contracts where you can put small amounts down and control a large portion of the asset? Are we seeing double or triple ETFs?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Number three, overconfidence. Is there a psychological belief that this is a store of value that is not questionable, that it will always retain its value over long cycles? The answer, again, unfortunately, is yes, even though gold has gone down in many times in history.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, is there political manipulation? Well, here the answer is not clear. I mean, there's definitely government and pseudo-government organizations like the IMF buying and selling gold, so there may be some political manipulation. But really the political manipulation is in the printing of dollars, which is the alternative to gold. And by printing dollars, we're effectively creating a debasement of the currency, and gold is something that cannot be debased. So maybe a half sort of warning flag, if you will, on gold.
All right.
From the politics. And then the biological lens is, is gold a popular dinner party topic of conversation? Are you seeing advertisements on TV, on subways, et cetera, advertising the purchasing of gold, the selling of gold? And the answer, unfortunately, here again is yes.
Absolutely.
So I think gold looks very bubbly. Whether or not it's a bubble, unfortunately, is something that's harder to answer, Billy, for one reason, is gold is, in my eyes, really an anti-asset rather than an asset. It is the alternative to something like paper currencies. And if you're going to be printing paper currencies, my suspicion is gold continues to rise. And if you stop printing paper currencies or perhaps even reduce the number of dollar bills in circulation, well, then gold may fall.
Interesting analysis from Vikram. And now, Vikram, one of the things I would add to the political foundations as well is the fact that large governments like China and India are actively buying up gold in large quantities to boost their share of gold, their stocks, or reserves. So that's adding to the bubble price as well.
Sure. I fully agree with that, Billy. And I think that's part of, that's related to the printing of dollars. If we were not printing dollars and the treasuries here in the United States might be deemed more attractive on the part of those entities, and they may channel their assets here in the form of buying treasuries instead. But yes, I agree with you.
All right, let's turn our attention to one that's a lot less obvious than gold is, and that's the price of college tuitions right now. Are we in a bubble with college tuitions?
Sure. So I have written a little bit about this topic, Billy, and I think it's a fascinating topic to explore because it is less traditional. And the answer here is, in many ways, education, higher education specifically, exhibits lots of the qualities and characteristics that typify bubbles. Number one, there seems to be a universal belief in the value of education, regardless of whether or not it's proving itself to be valuable, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone needs a bachelor's degree, and everyone foresees their children getting a bachelor's degree. The reality is it may not be for everyone. Number two, is there easy money supporting it? And here, one of the most disturbing data points I was able to find is that starting in 2010, for the first time in history, student loan debt in the United States exceeds credit card debt in the United States.
Wow.
That's a lot of money being borrowed to go after buying what is a potentially questionable asset of higher education. Number three, so we talked about the confidence, we talked about the easy money. Is there political manipulation? Well, again, here the answer is yes. Just as we as a country decided that housing was a right that everyone should be enabled to pursue, so too have we, through the form of federal financial aid, made education a universal goal at the higher education level. Well, it turns out we as a country with taxpayer dollars are supporting federal financial aid programs on the order of $150 billion a year, if
wow,
not larger. Well, that's money that potentially might be redeployed to higher return investments, such as early childhood education. particularly when I hear of stories like some of these for-profit education institutions that are providing very questionable education at best. Some of them are providing very valuable education, but there's a lot that are providing questionable education using taxpayer-funded dollars that burden the students with loans. That's not a good situation.
No, it is not.
And so at some point, particularly as unemployment stays high, the value of education, particularly higher education, is going to be questioned.
Without a doubt. Education looks as though it's frothy. We don't know whether the bubble will burst, but it's certainly percolating at this point. My guest is Vikram Mashanrani, and we are talking about his book, Boom Bustology. It's a fascinating subject. There's more to discuss, and unfortunately, time doesn't allow us to do that, Vikram. But if you will, please, give us some idea. If people are interested in the sound of your voice, they want to learn more about you, they want to learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
Sure. So on the web, the book does have a web page, and it has links, actually, Billy, to lots of articles I've written about education and other topics, the art markets, etc. It would be interesting for a lot of people. It's a very simple website. It's www.boombustology.com.
Boombustology.com. My guest has been Vikram Mashanrani. Thank you so much for being our special guest and making a complex subject very delightful and interesting. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, Billy.
Take care. We'll talk to you soon.